The word vritti means the process by which the moving beings live at the expense of the non-moving. So for a human being, vritti means acting for one's livelihood in a way that suits one's own nature, whether one acts in pursuit of selfish desire, comma, or in compliance with the Vedic injunctions, chodana. Okay. For moving beings, okay, this is... This one. Okay. Riti is sthanam. Okay. Just comparing the terms. For moving beings, the means of livelihood, vritti, generally consists of sustenance upon non-moving beings, or from the word cha, meaning and moving beings also. More specifically, for human beings, that is called what is called vritti consists of regulated means of living that carry out according to their own natures, whether by desire or by scriptural rules. Because right? They're giving a broad, because you're going to have both. So you have to be able to accommodate what goes on within the creation, because we're dealing with the Lord in his pastimes. So it has to include what is actually going on, like that. Okay. Yes.
It is like some occupation?
Yes, this would mean their occupation. So that's vritti means is that he is, how he gave the birth, acting according to one's own livelihood, way that suits his nature. So now that can either be that you're acting according to the suit of what suits the nature and defining according to what the Shastra says, or you can just be doing whatever you like to do.
Yes.
You know, so even in the Vedic culture, those who were doing just kind of what they wanted to do, these were the tribals, but much of the time they would follow a lot of the cultural elements of the, you know, Vedic society itself.
Yes.
Like sometimes one may see like gypsies and other things like that, but they dress, you know, it's like Vedic dress, but it's in their own taste. You know, they do it like in patchwork style, a million different colors, put mirrors, you know, do a whole, well, I don't know about now, but that's how they used to dress before.
Same now.
Like that. You know, so maybe that comes out because it means you do have the element that there is a style, you don't see it so much nowadays. But there's a style of choli that's made out of, I think it's 30 pieces or 29 or something like that. It's physically made like that. You make a new one, it's made out of all these small pieces. That's another thing. It could be because they have a lot of little bits of cloth, so then you can put it together and they put their whole outfit together like that. But it could also be just because that's the style, or it's come from there. But it wouldn't be that someone who has no single piece of cloth uses that. People who are doing new ones may do that also. So the point is they pick up so many things from there, but at the same time, their regulation, their particular mentality, the attitude, the qualities that they work with may not be of a standard that would be considered what the scriptural rules would be defining. You know, and then you have, as you go, you know, farther west, then that starts to drop more and more. Right? Mm-hmm. Prabhupada says, the farther west you go, the more degraded it becomes. Right? You know, so then it may be, you know, yeah. So, in other words, it's not a bad thing that, you know, Heisei, the gentlemen start at Calais. Because on the other side, then that means then they're a little less, you know. And then they have their issues about when you cross the Atlantic, you know, them, and they, you know, the East Coast about the West Coast, and then you have the Hawaiians, and then after that, then, you know, it just keeps going, you know. It does. So it's catching all of it, because all that would be included, because you see all these kinds of people described within the Purana, like famous story, the guy with the thumb.
Ekalavya?
Yeah, Ekalavya. So they're nishadas. So they're outside the Vedic system. But, you know, it features. And it's not that he wasn't qualified. He had the archery skill like Arjuna. But the problem was, is he didn't have any regulation according to scriptural rules. Arjuna would get up in the morning, take his bath, do his worship, attend other duties. Then he would go and practice, you know, under the direction of his guru, like that. Then they would, you know, they have the lunch and all the other things that they would do, take bath, wash clothes, clean the ashram, all these things, and their practices in the afternoon, you know, other kind of scriptural things in the evening. And then, you know, they would take rest at a regulated time. But Ekalavya didn't do any of this. He just would get up in the morning without taking a bath or anything, start shooting his arrows. So then people think, you know, in reality, so that's the difference. One is according to scriptural rules, one's not. One is with the blessing of the teacher, one's not. You know, so you get, but that's how he was acting. So in other words, vritti will take all, because every living entity will be following their vritti, but specifically in the Purana, it'll be about humans. But every living entity follows their life, their occupation, according to what suits their nature. You know, the birds will stay in the trees, you know, the snakes will stay in holes. The rats were in the holes. You know, that suited their nature, and it suits the rat's nature to come eat the rat, and then, you know, hey, you know, you got dinner and a free apartment, you know. It's good, you know. You know. So yeah.
Room and board,
yeah. Yes. Okay, whether by desire, what are you saying, comma, or by scriptural rules, 31. Okay. Yeah, before again, because it can be also within scriptural rules, the real purpose of scriptural rules is to please the Lord. So then we can also have those who are following vritti just for pious yes. credit for their yes. own, so that would also be called comma. Right? But here he's indicating, you know, human by following the scriptural rules and not up to that standard by not following the scriptural rules. Right? Okay, 31.
Mm-hmm. Is it a relation between nivritti and pravritti?
Not exactly, because in pravritti you can be very pious and follow all the Vedic things. Pravritti and nivritti will be karma and jnana. You know, but you also have those within the Vedic scriptural rules and those outside. Like, let's say the hippies. They were very, very, on one sense, very detached. They didn't yes. necessarily have a home. Yes. They didn't, you know, a few possessions, basically what they were wearing. Yes. You know, their favorite kazoo or something. You know, that they carry around, their tambours, you know, whatever it is. And like that, so in one sense, they were very detached. You know, they were into philosophy. They were, you know, that was the whole point. There had to be an ideology and a philosophical basis for what they talked about, how they lived. Though it wasn't very developed, it wasn't based on scripture. So even you see within this comma that you can have karma and jnana, or the nivritti and pravritti. Then you have what's recommended in Shastra. So the point is that all of these things are covered by this here vritti, which is sthanam, right? So this is the original. This is not the poshanam, right? Or raksha. This is vritti, just how maintenance of the universe goes on. Because right? He's given the natures and the primary creation, so people follow that. So then here in 31 footnote, those who are devoid of hands are prey for those who have hands. Those devoid of legs are prey for the four-legged. The weak are the subsistence of the strong, and the general rule holds that one living being is food for another. In other words, all the living beings, they're food for someone else. You know, like that. If nothing else, everybody eventually becomes food for the trees. Right? You know, but then the problem is that, and then everyone eats the trees. So it's just what's going on. That's the, you know, whenever you get too happy about the material arrangements, then, you know, these kind of perspectives are there. Okay, so that's Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.17. Right, so Manu mentions this, but doesn't get as much. It's a general, the point, like that. Also Ishupanishad, I think, mentions that. Exploitation of the weaker living being by the stronger is the natural law of existence. There is always an attempt to devour the weak in different kingdoms of living beings. There is no possibility of checking this tendency by any artificial means under material conditions. It can be checked only by awakening the spiritual sense of the human being by practice of spiritual regulations. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.17, per point. Right? So that's the only thing that can actually adjust this. Otherwise, as we mentioned before, is that your general populace is working very hard, and, you know, and the real benefit is going to only a few. Yes, yes. So they're the stronger. They're living at the, you know, expense of the weaker. It's always going on. It's just the way it works. So one can look at it in a more rough way, but it's the society. That's how it goes on. You know, the person who is willing to, or let's say, the person who, you know, has been planning, he's been working, he's been preparing everything, you know, for this big contract and all that, and it's worth big, and it's his promotion and everything. But then the arrangement is that it falls on Thanksgiving weekend. And so he's already has plans, you know, this family, this and that. He's told them too many times he's not going to do. Now, he can either dump them, get this, or spend with the family, and then someone else who is, in quote, unquote, you know, stronger in the corporate world will take that place and get all the benefit. He'll do all the work, they'll get the benefit. You know, so this is going on. Or at the expense of his own family, which are in the weaker position, then he'll, you know, maintain his position and move up and get more. You know, so it's, that's how it works. That's just the way the universe works. Now, with Krishna consciousness, this can be checked, because then it comes into a natural form that by following that, even the animals then respect the humans. It's mentioned, I think it's in Mahabharata, after Parasuram killed all the kings, you know, 21 generations, then after that, then the queens, they all approached the Brahmins. Right? And then so the children that came from that, they became the next kings. So then they were ruled in a very septic manner. So then the whole age, even though it was Treta Yuga, took on the flavor like Satya Yuga. And it said that because the humans were doing everything so nicely, and according to Shastra, even the animals were adjusting themselves and controlling their senses more. They weren't as rough as they normally were. Out of respect for the humans, just seeing how they're doing it, they were inspired. Because the natural position is the animals look up to the humans as the senior brothers. So that's why things don't go well when the humans then exploit the animals. Then it throws everything up. Because they're simple. They're animals. It's not like they could sit around and philosophize, hey, well, it's my karma and all that kind of stuff. You know, they just go by the feelings. And so when they do, then they aren't happy, and then everything becomes disturbed. Like that. But so this way we see even the environment that does work according to this law becomes more refined when the human beings follow. Yes.
I just heard the other day that actually now the jackals around here, they're getting, you know, more peaceful. They're coming out in the daytime. You know, they're not so as afraid as they used to be. They used to stay, you know.
No, now sometimes as you're walking by, they'll even just sit there on the side.
Exactly. So that shows that, you know, in this environment, they can actually do that.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The birds are also, you know, they just sit there. Like that. It also depends who's walking by. Said before, we had these parrots, and they had this cave in the bar. They always sit on the outside, you know, where the kiss is more open. But, you know, everybody would walk by. But this one boy would walk by, and they would see him, and they would... And once he's gone by, then they would be back. It was kind of funny. But, yeah. I guess he was just too much energy, you know, he's like that, so that they're a little wary of him. So. Yeah, no, you can't. Okay. Okay. So that was 31. Yes. Then in 6.2.4, in each age the infallible Lord appears in this world among the animals, human beings, sages, and demigods. By his acts in these incarnations, he protects the universe and kills the enemies of Vedic culture. This is called Raksha. This is Bhagavatam 12.7.14. So Raksha is Poshana.
Yes.
I mean, Sukadeva uses the term Poshana, Suta Goswami uses the term Raksha. So then we see is that that's why the point is you can't say that one thing is for only like one canto does one thing, because Ishanukata means is the discussion about the Lord and his activities, or Vamsanucharitam, but means he maintains the creation through his pastimes and his incarnations, right? And in doing that, he's going to interact with the devotees, so you get Poshanam, right? And that, and many times those devotees may be manus, may be kings. So like this, they're all combined. These are just so you're clear about the different areas and know what's being covered. But when they're actually being applied, so many of these are being done at once. You know, like Narad Muni, he's talking about his experience in his last life, but then you also get Nirodha, annihilation. You know, so it's just all these. Okay. The word yai means by these incarnations. Here are three other topics. Sustenance, maintenance, and narrations about the Lord are implied. Right? Because that his point was is you have the direct meaning, and then you have what's implied by that. So that's what I mean. Sustenance, you know, that means with the devotees, maintenance is there. That's the raksha. And narrations about the Lord, which he calls here Vamsanucharitam. So those are implied.
Maintenance is the raksha?
Maintenance is vritti.
Vritti, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So basically, by these incarnations, then you're talking about the Lord. But at the same time, as then in doing that, then you get maintenance, sustenance, and the pastimes of the Lord.
Yes.
So as you mentioned before, there's the direct elements. Then there's the ones that are inferred or implied. Because you can't have one without the other. Just like if you have Shakti, there must be Shaktiman.
Yes.
If there's Shaktiman, there must be Shakti. But you might be talking about one or the other.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. 62.5. In each reign of Manu, these six appear as manifestations of Lord Hari. The ruling Manu, the chief demigods, Manu's sons, Indra, the great sages, and the partial incarnations of the Lord. Okay, so during the reign of Manu, you get these six, right? The ruling Manu himself, the chief demigods, Manu's sons, Indra, the great sages, and the partial incarnations of the Lord. So they all go together because your maintenance will be within this circle, because this is the circle that basically whoever is present for. Because when the Manu changes, you change everybody. Right, so the Lord can incarnate at any time, but the ruling Manu, the chief demigods, Manu's sons, Indra, the great sages, and that everything changes.
That's the partial.
That will be yes, partial, but not as partial as at the end of the. That'll be more. Yeah, yes, it's not as much as Manu there, but not as much as the end of a Divya Yuga, because this will be the end of 72 Divya Yugas.
So Divya Yuga is the first.
Divya Yuga is the smallest. So that's just the partial. I think I'm not even sure if it comes to the earth. It may. I think it goes below the earth, because the earth, then you already have the kings of the Sun and Moon Dynasty. They're already in some villages up north, and they're just waiting until the end of Kali Yuga, right? So they'll have to do a lot of walking out of the village and then coming back when, people won't recognize them, or they have to be very good at dressing up. So that, you know, otherwise, how do you live for, you know, 400, you know, actually, you know, four, what is it? Yeah, 432,000 years, you know, or if not more from before, but everybody else is, you know, 100 now because they're in the village, and then as it goes, yeah, you know, go out, you know, dye your beard gray, dye it black, dye it, okay. You know, that, you know, until at the end they're only living, you know, 20 years, that's an old man, you know, like that. And these guys are going to be, you know, so probably at that time they'll go farther into the forest.
Yeah, makes sense.
Implied here is that narrating of the facts of the Manus and others is meant to tell of transcendental religious principles. Right? So the Sundarva. So this verse has the same meaning as the verse cited before. So he appears to maintain, and then that maintenance, he's doing that with the Manus and all these other demigods, right? And in these incarnations, but at the same time as he's interacting with all of them. Right, so showing how this verse and the previous verse are talking about the same things. It's just here is focusing on the Manu, and then here is talking about the Lord. And this is called Raksha, right? Yeah. Implied, okay. 62.6. Dynasties are lines of kings that issue forth from Lord Brahma and extend throughout past, present, and future. The accounts of such dynasties and their prominent and their most prominent members constitute dynastic history. So that's Vamsanucharita. So this is also, for Sukadeva Goswami, this will be in, how do you say, the activities of the Lord and his devotees. So in a, he's putting it there that the activities of the Lord and his devotees, the kings are always involved, so you don't have to separately describe them. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, what you get is that in Vamsanucharitam, then you get the Lord's pastimes. Yes. And in Ishanukata, it's the Lord's pastimes included are the kings. Yes. Right? So the dealing with the kings, that the Lord is there, or dealing with the Lord, the kings are there. Yes. Right? Because we're, you know, means, yeah. Accounts of these kings and deeds of their royal family members are called Vamsanucharita. Thus far, Sri Jiva has defined the first 7 out of 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. Primary creation, secondary creation, livelihood, protection, reigns of Manus, dynasties, and the activities of dynasties. Because right? in the 5, dynasties is on its own. It doesn't have activities of dynasties. Because in the 5, then the Lord is included in primary creation. Because that's all about the Lord. Isn't coming, his, you know, because naturally if you've created it, you know, the maintenance is there, the destruction. So that's all, everything about the Lord is in primary creation. Then when you deal with secondary creation, then you deal with Brahma and everybody that comes. Then the Prajapatis is the next. Then you have the Manus, then you have the kings. So in that, since the Lord is there, his interaction, that's going to be based on the devotional interaction and all that. So he's going to protect the universe from those who are opposing the Vedic principles. At the same time, he's going to be taking care, nourishing the devotees. Right? So then you're going to get that element of potion of the raksha. Does that make sense? In the next section, Srila Jiva Goswami defines the remaining items and concludes Sri Tattva Sandarbha by explaining their purpose. Okay. Here, Jiva Goswami, summary of text 63. Here, Jiva Goswami defines the last 3 topics: annihilation, samsta, cause, hetu, and the supreme shelter, apashraya. By concluding that the ashraya of everything is Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, the author shows that he alone is the subject, sambandha tattva, of Srimad Bhagavatam. 63. There are 4 types of cosmic annihilation: occasional, naimitika; elemental, prakriti; continuous, nitya; and ultimate, atyantika. All brought into effect by the inherent potency of the Supreme Lord. Learned scholars have called this topic disillusion, samsta. Okay. So here we're saying occasional, elemental, continuous, and ultimate. So these four are defined as follows. Naimitika, the dissolution that occurs at the end of Brahma's life, and also at the end of each manvantara. So this is occasional. After one day of Brahma, annihilation occurs during his night. This should be night instead of life. Which is of the same duration. At that time, all the three planetary systems are subject to destruction. The original creator, Lord Narayan, lies down upon the bed of Ananta Sesh and absorbs the entire universe within himself while Lord Brahma sleeps.
The first one is the day?
Because it says his life, but it's supposed to be at the end of his day. It means in this description of the Bhagavatam called Prakriti, the dissolution of the universe that comes to the end of Lord Brahma's life. When the two halves of the lifetime of Lord Brahma, the most elevated creating being, are complete, the seven basic elements of creation are annihilated. Right? So the seven basic, which one's left? So earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence,
false
egos left. That's the problem. That's why you come back, right? Because that's the uti, you know, or the, what do you call it?
Yes.
The hetu, the cause, right?
Yeah.
O king, upon the annihilation of the material elements, the universal egg, comprising the elemental amalgamation of creation, is confronted with destruction. Okay, so that's prakriti, elemental. Then, 36, okay. Of him means of the Supreme Lord. Oh no, we're still in the footnote. Yeah, I was going to say, what has that got to do? The elemental, this is continuing with two. The element of fire then seizes the taste from the element water, which, deprived of its unique quality, taste, merges into fire. Air seizes the form inherent in fire, and then fire, deprived of form, merges into air. The element ether seizes the quality of air, namely touch, and that air enters into ether. Then, O king, false ego in ignorance seizes sound, the quality of ether, after which ether merges into false ego. False ego in the mode of passion takes hold of the senses. False ego in the mode of goodness absorbs the demigods. Then the total Mahatattva seizes false ego along with its various functions, and that Mahat is seized by the three basic modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. My dear Parikit, these modes are further overtaken by the original unmanifest form of nature impelled by time. And so then they go back into Pradhan. Because when they came out because we see the ego, once it gets the ego stays all the way through until that whole thing's absorbed into Brahman. Brahman meaning Pradhan. So, but when it comes out, Nrsimha Purana explains is that false ego that goes in with the living entities, that as you add that, then just by the one adding, you get all the elements to come. Means, or you get this first thing to come out, the modes. Then you add it again, then you get the ego. You add again, then you get the intelligence and senses. Add again, then the mind. Then you add again, then you get the ether, like this. It just keeps going until you get earth. So then it's just the opposite is happening. Just they're just taking back the things and it's going. So, So in other words, the more you're more involved in material creation, the more ego is there. That's the key. You reduce the ego, you're less involved. You get rid of the ego, you're not involved.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So false ego in the modes, what were they referring to?
The false ego in the modes means you're dealing with the mind intelligence and the specific identity. But that's all based on the false ego of I'm the controller and the enjoyer. So if you get rid of that false ego, the other three are automatically taken care of. Right? So if you identify, I am servant of Krishna, then that means that the other three are brought into their proper position, and those three, they control the adiatmak, adidaivak, and adibhote. So then everything that you have, you as the soul, will engage in the Lord's service, what you have, which is the adibhote. You know, and that is, you know, the demigods automatically are taking care of that because you're worshiping the Lord, so you don't have to separately deal with them. Right? So he's ultimately the shelter. Right? So then just by changing your view that I am servant of Krishna and seeing everything in that way, you're not under the modes. You work with the modes because the modes still manage the place. You know, like that. Like let's say, how do you say? Let's say administrators in whatever the city or state or whatever, they may deal with the prison warden, but they're not under his control. They work with him. The prisoners are under his control. So as soon as you give up that false ego and surrender to Krishna, you're working with the modes, not under the modes.
Yes.
In other words, yeah. What's that? Okay. Nitya, which was amazing, continuous, right? Nitya, continuous disillusion of every material object as it inextricably marches towards destruction with each passing moment. So poetic.
Yes.
Right? All material entities undergo transformation, are constantly and swiftly eroded by the mighty currents of time. The various stages of existence that material things exhibit are the perpetual cause of their generation and annihilation. So that means it's just going on. I mean, it's just life itself is continuous destruction.
Make a good Valentine's card.
Yeah, could. It's continuous. It's at least it's got the stableness to it, right?
Yeah.
A nice birthday card also.
Yeah. Yes.
That's a continuous destruction.
You know, it's a continuous march. So, yeah. Okay. At Atyantika, the ultimate dissolution of the jiva's gross and subtle bodies as it enters the spiritual sky. In this sense, it corresponds to liberation, mukti, the ninth of the 10 topics of Bhagavatam enumerated by Sukadeva Goswami. This is continuous. Okay. My dear Parikit, when the illusory false ego that binds the soul has been cut off with the sword of discriminating knowledge, and one has developed realization of Lord Achyuta, the Supreme Soul, this is called Adyantika, or ultimate annihilation of material existence. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.34. That's why the Mayavadis come back. Right? Because there's no ultimate disillusion. So when they get to the point where they think it's going to be ultimate disillusion, it's not. And if they do actually get to ultimate disillusion, then they'll find themselves in the spiritual world.
Yes.
Like that, yeah. But they won't get there because unless you're a devotee. So, okay, so here is giving a different approach, because up to now we've been looking at disillusions as simply being how the material elements are carried. You know, I mean, which part of the universe is being destroyed and how much. So here's giving Naimittika, disillusion at the end of Brahma's life and also the end of each manvantar. So then within that, it includes those lesser ones. Then you have the one at the universe, end of the universe of Brahma's life. But then you have what's going on in a daily fashion, and then when you have the living entity actually freeing himself from material energy. Does that make sense? So that's why most of the time when you see the discussions about disillusion, it's the same principle, whether it's you know, going to sleep at night, whether it's at the end of the Mahayuga, end of the Manvantar, it's all the same thing. Only this Prakriti, then the destruction of the elements, then everything that is the building blocks of it, those are destroyed. But before that, it's just you take it apart. You know, it's like you take the Lego bricks and build something, and then it's taken apart. Yes. You know, but now if they take it and, you know, how you say,
burn it.
Yeah, burn it or something. That is like there's no more Lego. Yes. Right? Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah. Does that make sense? So this is a more important, because these bigger ones are how the universe works, how universal time works. The other one are what applies specifically to us. Right? Because in the daily, everything that is important to you is slowly falling apart. You know? And then at the same time, if you want to stop that, then you have to remove what is the cause of that. Because the false ego is the cause. right? Mm-hmm. And so if you remove that, then you place yourself back in the spiritual world. There is no more material world. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's the difference.
Yes. All right. Sorry. When this all the elements going back, is the universe still maintained, the egg?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's the Mahavishnu breathes in, so then they all kind of disappear again. Yeah, but it's not that, you know, it works out. Don't worry. It's not that there won't be. There'll be a shortage or something. We got some pradhan here, but there's no, you know, there's no egg, you know, like that. Hello, anybody? Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Rose got that recovered.
Right.
Yes.
So there is a continuous dissolution is more or less nitya, means always.
Yes, that's what he's saying, nitya.
Is it, can we say that life is always coming?
That's there, but in here, because we're discussing the element of annihilation. Because the life coming, why is it coming? That would be your hetu, your material desires, because therefore it comes up again. But material energy is your desires are there, but then she's always breaking it down. And then, you know, you come up with a new one, and then that's broken down.
Yes.
And that didn't work out, then you come up with, you know, like that.
Yes.
And at one point we get tired and we go, why? And then at that time, then you know, the devotees come down and say, Harinam and all that, and then it's like, okay, well, it's like that one, what do you call it? That this one existential French movie. It was something very famous, but not very popular. It means because this guy, you know, the standard existential, you know, trying to figure out who he is and does he exist or not exist, and trying to kill himself and do all kinds of stuff like that. You know, it never works. So he's fine at the end. He can't. Nothing works. Nothing. He can't find anything. He's sitting on the beach, completely distraught, doesn't know what to do, and in the distance he sees the devotees doing Harinam way down the beach. So he gets up, walks down, and, you know, seeing what they're doing and all that. And then at the end, you see him dancing in ecstasy with the devotees, and the camera pulls back down the beach. Right? So it actually gave the right ending, but it was just that the artistic world couldn't handle that. No, because you're not supposed to give a conclusion. Yeah. And it's the Hare Krishna? No,
even
no.
That.
You know, so it didn't work out so good like that.
Maybe that was the element was the social suicide of John.
Oh, yes.
The ultimate existential, social suicide.
Exactly.
That's all you need. You want to socially destroy yourself, become a Hare Krishna.
They just didn't get how depressing it was. If they had understood that,
They needed a commentary. Just, you know.
That's why we need the purpose.
Yes, that's why we need the purpose. Okay. So there are four types of causes. So this occasional naimitika includes, except for the final one, it includes all these other three that we've discussed. Right? Then elemental, that would be at the end of Brahma's life, so that's when Mahavishnu breathes in. Right? So these occasional means it all goes back into to Garbhadaksha Vishnu. Right? But the elemental, that goes back into Mahavishnu. Yes?
Is it like a gradual destruction, or is it Big Bang, or what happens?
Big Bang.
It
would have to be
Big Crunch.
Gnab.
Of course, Big Gnab.
The other way.
The Gib Gnab.
Huh?
The Gib Gnab.
Gib Gnab, yes. Yes. No, it's. I mean, you're dealing with cosmic time, so you know how long it takes. That's not quite so sure, but you know, I it's not one of those things. Probably people hang around to check it out. But Markandeya, he ended up in, you know, those kind of things. You know, floating around in the ocean like that.
But he wasn't able.
Hmm?
He wasn't there.
No, it wasn't. I mean, what would you do if you suddenly find you're out in the middle of the ocean?
But he wanted that.
Huh?
He wanted that. He wanted to live that long.
Oh, he wanted to live that long, but you don't think about
think
those.
The consequences.
He's a sage.
You know, he's saying, you know, so it's just like, how you say, you know, you live long, you got your daughter married, finally, you relax like that. And then if you live for 500 years, then you got to get your granddaughter, your great-granddaughter, your great-great-granddaughter, you know, they didn't think about that part, right? Okay, then nitya continuous just means the nature of the material world, the mode of ignorance to destroy everything. Whatever is created gets destroyed. And then the ultimate means then, where one takes up devotional service, removes the Purusha Bhav, right? So there's no more Karana Sharir, and then one then takes up, you know, devotional service in the relationship with the Lord. So that is actual liberation. So that's what he's saying here, is that becomes part of the discussion of liberation, actually. Okay. All brought into effect by the inherent potency of the Supreme Lord. Learned scholars have called this topic disillusion. Okay. Of him means of the Supreme Lord, and by his nature means by his energy. The word ultimate implies that included herein is the topic liberation. So liberation is implied in there. The nimittic pralaya, occasional annihilation, occurs at the end of each Brahma's days when Brahma goes to sleep. It is detailed as follows. At the end of the day of Brahma, under the insignificant portion of the mode of darkness, the powerful manifestation of the universe merges into the darkness of night. By the influence of eternal time, the innumerable living entities remain merged in that disillusion and all is silent. When the night of Brahma ensues, all the three worlds are out of sight and the sun and moon are gone, just as in due course of an ordinary night. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.11.28.29. Because otherwise, it's, you know, the sun goes, it's there, it's like that, then the jivas won't be able to rest properly. Here begins Jiva Goswami. Because there was one, what was that one? It was saying about everything just goes back into it. Okay, at that time, the three planetary systems are subject to destruction. The original creator, Lord Narayan, lies down upon the bed of Anantasesha and absorbs the entire universe within himself while Lord Brahma sleeps. So the universe goes back into him. And then, when Brahma wakes up in the morning, then he'll have to recreate it. So this secondary creation is also called recreation. You have primary creation, secondary creation. The secondary creation includes recreation, because that's constantly going on, right? As we mentioned, you know, you have this night that this is happening, then you have the manas, and there's 500,000 of those. You know, so there's a regular, this aspect of recreation is going on. But it's the same as visarga, secondary. Here, Jiva Goswami uses the Sarva Sambhadani to enter into detailed analysis of the topic of annihilation. Based on quotes from the Bhagavatam and other Puranas, he begins by describing the subject of Naimitika Pralaya called Manvantara Pralaya. Annihilation is defined in the next beginning, Naimitika. The characteristics of the kinds of annihilation mentioned can be found in the fourth chapter of the 12th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam 12.4.3-38. And annihilation also occurs at the end of each reign of Manu, as stated in the first kanda of the Vishnu Dharmota Purana. It'll be the same thing, whether it's you're talking about the night of Brahma or you're talking about a Manvantara. It's the same kind of principles there, right? It's just how complete. One is a partial, the other is a full, right? But the elements are still there, so in the morning, then you can go on again, right? But once the elemental is there, then there's nothing to work with, right? Because there is no Brahma there to work with the elements which aren't there either, right? So it's gets too vaudeville-ish, yes.
Yes. In one day of Brahma, there is 14 manas?
14 manas.
In one day.
One day. Like that. So we're on the 7th, so we're in the midday. We're in midday just in his 51st year. It mentions two halves of Brahma's life, so we're in the first year of the second half of his life.
No midlife praxis, right?
Yeah, he doesn't seem to have that problem.
He's too busy.
Yeah, well, too busy, and it also it works out. You know, his occupation did work. He was successful at it. He's good at it, you know. Because by now he's done 250,000 partial recreations with the you know end of the manas. So you know he's good. He's good. Right? You know.
Now he's taking Vanaprastha life.
Yeah. I think it's they say 10,000 hours if you put into anything, then you become an expert at it. So, you know, it's been a few more than 10,000 years. So he's good. He's good. Okay, Vajra said, okay, as stated in the first khanda of the Vishnu Dharmotra Purana, Vajra said, O learned Brahmana, most fortunate one, please explain to me the state of affairs that develops when a reign of Manu is over. Markandeya said, when a reign of Manu is over, right, also he lives for a lifetime of Brahma, so he's seen all these, so it's not a matter, he's talking theory here, you know, he's like, you know, oh no, here we go. Yeah, okay, get out the boat. You know, yes. Markandeya said, when a reign of Manu is over, the demigods who ruled it achieve Maharloka, where they live sinlessly. Manu, along with Indra and some other demigods, O son of the Yadus, reaches Brahmaloka, from which return to the lower worlds is unlikely. The seven great sages also take up permanent residence there with no official positions and live like Lord Brahma. The Supreme Lord, O Vajra, then assumes the form of water, great in power and garlanded by waves, and covers the entire surface of the earth. Everything sheltered by the earth is then destroyed, O Yadava, but not destroyed, O King, are the famous principal mountains. So that means, sadly, even New York disappears. But the mountains, the famous principal mountains are there, so... Okay, footnote 33. Here the principal mountains are Mahendra, Malaya, and others, like Gandamandana and that, not necessarily K1 or K2. The rest of the world, with all its moving and non-moving creatures, is destroyed. But then the goddess Earth becomes a boat, O descendant of the Yadu family. She carries every single kind of seed, and the Supreme Lord playfully pulls that boat from one place to another. As the Lord of Lords, Master of the Universe, pulls the boat along, all the sages praise the infallible for his splendid deeds. Then the immeasurable, valorous Lord Matsya, wandering about in the water full of powerful waves, directs the wandering boat. Tying the boat to a peak of the Himalayas, the Supreme Lord Matsya, the Master of the Universe, then becomes invisible, and the creatures who are on the boat find themselves standing on the peak. That time comes just like the Krita age, and it is known as the time when all has been cleaned. The water then becomes calm, just as before, O ruler of men. And Manu all begin to perform their duties. Thus I have described to you, O master of the Yadus, the state of the worlds at the end of a reign of Manu. What else should I now recite to you? Please tell me in brief, O King, Vishnu Dharmotra, Purana 1. And so we have also that Vaivasvata Manu, how you have the boat and you know all the sages and everything is there. So it's the same kind of principle. Yes. After relating this Puranic account, Jiva Goswami continues his commentary. Likewise, as in the Vishnu Dharmotra, this annihilation is explicitly affirmed by the section of Sri Harivamsa that describes the annihilation occurring in each Manmantara and in the commentaries on the Harivamsa. And so also Srimad Bhagavatam tells of devastation at the end of the fifth and sixth Manmantaras. There's a passage beginning, his previous body had been destroyed, but he, the same Daksha, inspired by the Supreme Will, created all the desired living entities in the Chakshusha Manvantara. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-49. And another beginning with the verse, when there was a complete inundation after the period of the Chakshusha Manu, the Lord accepted the form of a fish and protected Vaivasvata Manu, keeping him upon a boat. But so then that other one was seemed to be relating to that.
Mara?
Yes.
Are the Manus a position?
Yes, they're a position. Like that. Like you see, Daksha, who is a son of Brahma, not that he doesn't end up as someone else's, because they always do something strange, some of them. There's quite a few of these. I mean, from what I understand, Daksha and Bhrigu end up being born to others because their body gets destroyed. So then they continue. But the position of Manu is an office, like that. So here, Daksha, who is the son of Brahma, you know, so he's a Prajapati, he also is taking up that position as a Manu. Right? Does that make sense?
Is that as far as it goes?
Meaning?
And then they just become...
When they finish the office, then it mentions, then they go up to Brahma Loka.
No, I mean, as they prefer, and then those are no longer positions. Like
they, sorry, not no, no, no. It's a position. So someone will take up that office.
Yeah, but then their children?
No. It's just they're there for their reign. Mm-hmm. And so the dynasty, you know, expands and all that. And then at the end of their reign, then someone else takes the post. That's why it says Manu and the sons of Manu. It doesn't mention that, you know, the how you say, That's the line of kings. That one is then it goes down in that way. Okay.
And
yes.
When you speak about the 12th match and Manu is one of them.
Manu is one. Yes. So I have Bhuva Manu.
So it is a special one.
Yes, because he's the son of Brahma. The others may or may not be, but he's considered the primary of the Manus. At least Manusamita will be there because that's
yes.
where the laws are coming.
Yes.
But the principle is he's the primary because he's the original Manu.
Okay.
Then you have another six, right? So then you have these seven Manus, and then it goes through again. So it seems that there's positions that they have names,
yes.
and you go through these twice.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So Vaivasvata, Chakshusha, these are the position.
Yes.
So there's the
yes.
Chakshusha Manu, not that his name is Chakshusha.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? His, just like you say, you know, yes, Mr. President, you know. It's not his name, it's his office and all that. So then, does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So then they'll see in that way. But from what I understand, there's seven names, seven positions,
yes.
and then they go through twice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get to 14. Is that
yes.
You saw? Took darshan?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Nice.
Okay. Similarly, Srimadvacharya says in his Bharata Tatparya, quote, during the annihilation after the Manvantara, the Lord of Lords took the form of a fish and gave mystic knowledge to Manu. Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya 3:43. Okay. In the twelfth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are these words of Shaunaka. Quote, the same Markandeya Rishi, the foremost descendant of Bhrigu, took birth in my own family during the current day of Brahma. During this time, no dissolution of the created beings occurs. Here, the reluctance to accept an annihilation at the end of a Manvantara pertains to the kind of annihilation that occurs at the end of Brahma's day. This is indicated by the words, by which the whole universe is devoured. Srimad Bhagavatam 12:8-2. And by the fact that during an annihilation at the end of a Manvantara, the future Manu and others remain alive, right? Because in other words, there's a destruction, but it doesn't destroy the Manus. Whenever it's that much, the destruction is up to Indra's place. So those persons go up to the Maharloka. But it says the Manu, he goes up to Brahmaloka, like that. And so then they hang out there until, you know, it's recreated again.
Those jivas that occupy the post of Manu, they don't go up. I mean, in their evolution, because usually they go down. I don't mean physically they go to Maharloka or Brahmaloka when they leave their bodies.
It depends which way they're going. It can
if they're devotees or not.
Means if they're in a position, if they're one of the 33 million office holders within the universal management, they have to be devotees. But it's just a matter of how much, because the tendency is that they will tend to be neophytes,
yes.
right? Because they're interested in that position, authority, facility, all these different types of things. So, yeah. And otherwise, if they're not devotees, how will they take part in the universal management when the universe is meant to create devotees? So that's why they can appreciate that it has to work in this way. Well, the demons, their point is this place is for us to enjoy. So, you know, take what you can get, you know. So it's a bit more wild. That's why, even though they may be, by the time factor, take over the heavenly planets and the demigods are kicked out, but because it's not the natural position, eventually the demigods will come back into power, because it's not their position to do. So just like modern society may take a prominence, but at some point that prominence will wane. You know, because we can say, no, it'll go on forever, but, you know, I'm sure that the Greeks were thinking that, you know, and then, you know, the Egyptians thought that, and, you know, then along came Caesar, you know, and then the Romans thought that, and then along came the Visigoths, you know, and so, you know, just slowly, everybody has their time. You know, Italy was the place, you know, Greece was the place, then Italy was the place, France, you know, was a major player, England's a major player, Germany's a player, you know, then even Poland was a player. You know, so everybody had their time, and they thought the Ottomans also, you know, Austria-Hungary, well, that was part of the Germanic kind of scene, yeah. You know, the cult kind of...
Turkey.
Well, that's the next, that's the Ottomans. Okay. That was taking over after the Eastern Empire collapsed, and that just transformed into there. So each one thinks that they're going on, and you can say is they, you know, they're going on for a while. The Romans say they went on for, you know, what's it, 14, 20, you know, two centuries. The Eastern, you know, the Western then it was 704. So, you know, 1,100 years, you know. So, you know, they're going for some time, and these other ones go for a few hundred years, and this and that. But so each one thinks, but eventually at some point, something goes down, you know, because something else comes up. You push in one place, something else comes up. You push there, something, you know, it's just the way it works.
Just like America right now,
it's
down to hell.
Yes, you know.
Rise and fall of America.
Yes.
Rise and fall of America.
Yes. Yes, yes. So it was, as Jiva Goswami was giving before, is that when you're discussing one topic, others are inferred. So that was inferred, but you know, you made the point. How you say, practically digestible by everybody else.
I'm from America. I have to say something.
Yeah, yeah. No. Like that. Okay. Well, this is just going to keep going for a while. So then we'll end here and then...
Well, the earth becoming a boat means like...
It's floating in space now. Why can't it float on some water?
It's still
cold. Water's got more substance than ether, so... You know what I'm saying?
It's still a ball?
What does it matter if it's a ball or... You know,
just for the sake of absorption. You know.
I mean, boat generally indicates you can get into it, so.
Big hole.
Yeah, it could be, yeah. Like that. Because the thing is there's a lot more than is what we're able to perceive.
Yes.
That's the difficulty, is we think that, no, because I have senses, I can see everything. Yes. But the point is there's things that we can't see. You know what I mean? The simplest being you can't see your eyelids, you know. You can say, well, I can see the outside, but you can't see the inside. But you can't get closer to your eyeball than your eyelids, and you can't see it. You see it?
Not really.
Yeah, so that's the point. It's not really working.
Worth a shot.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, science, come on.
Yeah, all in the name of science.
The name of science. Huh? But yeah. So therefore you prove Shabda by your endeavoring pratyaksha. So these kind of things is that it's just the way that man can't understand, but you know, it's the way it is. Okay, so then we'll continue on Thursday. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai
Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki
jai
Jainata
Maharaj, just to clarify, the false ego and the mode of goodness, that's the mind?
Yes, that comes from there. Also, the demigods come from there.
Okay.
So we'll get to it. So many details are there.
Okay.
But we get to these later cantos. So let's say, I think second, third, and fifth, the creation is described. A few times. You know, just each time something different is brought out because the question will be somewhat different. So then. Yes. So we get it. But basically, it's that. False ego, yes. And so it describes, because everything is controlled by the mode, so everything has to come from there.
Yeah.
So then in these different discussions of the creations, then they discuss the different kinds of, what comes from what mode and everything. So that would be more clear. So it gives an indication of how it functions. So it's like the mind may have the element of, when it comes to passion or ignorance, it's not actually satisfied. So it's tend to come there. So when there's regulation, when there's knowledge, that then the mind is peaceful. So that's the point. So that will actually make the mind work properly. But most people are thinking, with passion or ignorance, then I'll make the mind peaceful. You know, I think people they want to forget. So like that. But it doesn't always work. It's just like, let's say, just for example, just historically, it's not the standard description of the French Foreign Legion that people become peaceful or satisfied or self-realized. Even though they go there to forget, they
true. The enemies become very peaceful.
But that, I think that has a lot to do with the destructive element of the mobile ignorance. Yeah, like that, so.
They become red too.
Yeah. So the thing is that then you can understand is that if the mind is disturbed, it's the mode of goodness that's going to make it.
Yes.
Like that. So then you have the aspect of the people want to work on that level, then what will create the mode of goodness? But most of the time it's taken, what will make it so that you can be merged back into society and be a member of the society and enjoy the facilities and the interactions like everything else. So the giving the mode of passion is a solution. But you have to be in somewhat a little bit regulated in that more, so that giving a touch of goodness just enough to get you to passion, right? Like that. So it's that's the difficulty, is that it's not understood. So that's the whole idea, is that from creation, because we're in the situation we're in because of how the creation unfolds. So understanding how it unfolds, we can bring it properly in line so it works nicely. And then we can reverse that. Does that make sense? So even here, it's like if you wanted to destroy it, it's like how they fold up. So it's like so many senses, so many things, where do you start? You start with what's from the earth and move it back.
Is there something happening when we reach earth that makes the process stop?
Stop means?
Yeah, you add false ego, and you add and you add and you add, and then it seems like at earth then...
So the elements are there. If there are more elements, you keep adding, but there aren't any more.
No, it's just, okay. That's just
Play-Doh or something. Huh?
Atlas. Yeah, he's holding on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You get Atlas who has to hold it up.
Not enough smoke in this class.
Not enough smoke.
You never get
no. He does enough smoke that you don't have to do smoking in the temple.
Yeah, no.
He takes care of the smoke from the whole school.
Yeah. Well, actually, what he could do is before he starts, he could go around the whole place, you know, and then get rid of all the mosquitoes and then come back.
So just the false ego and the mode of passion would be the intelligence, and what would be
the senses.
And the senses.
The senses.
And what would false ego and the mode of
worship
ego?
That would be the body. Because that's what everything sits in. So it's what. So that's the whole point, is in the material world, everything is residing in ignorance. The basis of existence is ignorance. Because sat transforms into ignorance. Right? Chit or knowledge transforms into, you know, the activities here, passion, and then ananda transforms into goodness. So any happiness that you could get will come from following goodness.
Most devotees have a rather shallow understanding.
So how does it work that it's the last of the elements? That is there. First
is the last is the best.
No, but I mean, like, it's, you know, it's the main one. That's, you know,
no, but it doesn't mean that it's not there. It's just like, well, but where does that one take shelter? Like, the mind will deal with the other two.
But for some devotees, it's very controversial.